First of all, I would like for you to meet some good friends of mine who are visiting with us this evening. They've been here once before, but Eddie and Debbie Sexton from El Dorado, Arkansas. Debbie runs the church there in El Dorado. She's a secretary. You know how that is. And is a good friend. Eddie and Debbie are among our very closest friends. Their daughter Tessa is with them. She has been a missionary in Brazil for 4 years. She's a speech therapist or pathologist. I never quite know which one to say at College Station. And we're just glad to have them visiting with us this weekend. So take the opportunity to meet them, if you would, afterward. Also, I have something I would like to say about this morning. When Janice and I were contemplating the possibility of moving here, and we were trying to the best of our ability, evaluate things, then one of the things that is the most important to me is obviously the eldership in a congregation and whether or not I can feel like I can work with that eldership. And let me just say that this morning, and not just the things that were said, and not just the fact that it was said, but the fact that what was said, more than you probably may ever know, has hundreds of hours of prayer behind it, and many, many hours of trying to make sure that things are said and done in such a way that it will be beneficial and profitable to the congregation. And so let me say that it is an honor, personally, to work with these men, because in case you don't know it, there's probably, and I can't officially say this, I mean, I don't know what the statistics are, but I'm going to say that I feel fairly confident in saying, and I think I'm being probably on the shallow side of this, there's probably not one eldership in 100 that would address this. Most elderships would just turn a blind eye and hope that nothing happens. But these men are truly desiring and trying to be spiritual leaders of this congregation. They truly do care for and love the Lord, His Word, and His flock. And I very much appreciate them and their willingness to put themselves out there, because you know and I know that when you take a stand, you very likely are going to get some criticism. And so I want to publicly say how much I appreciate them, each one of them, and how much I love them for the love that they have for me and for you and for the Lord. And the congregation said, thank you. If you would, open your Bibles to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. My daddy used to look at a tough job and evaluate it and turn to his son and say, son, it's going to take some doing to get this job done. Now, you know, I heard that so many times that I don't even know if I knew for sure. I thought everybody said that and then found out that they didn't. But in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 1 through 5, as I read that, it occurred to me it's going to take some doing to get us to heaven. And it's going to take more doing than we're able to do. It's going to take something beyond our ability to get that done. In verse 1 through 4, and I want to look at this passage down through verse 13 tonight. Paul here, in the context of Israel, and when they started out on their wilderness trek and how they ended up and what was different, he said, for I do not want you to be ignorant of the fact, brothers, that our forefathers were all under the cloud, they all passed through the sea. They were all baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. They all ate the same spiritual food. And even though the New International doesn't say it in verse 4, you can write the word because it's in the Greek text, and all drank the same spiritual drink. And then he says, for they drank from the spiritual rock that accompanied them or followed them, and that rock was Christ. So what he's saying in this, without getting into the details, and sometime when we study 1 Corinthians, we'll look at each one of those individually, but what he's saying is everybody started out at the same place. Everybody had the same advantages. Everybody had the same opportunities. But in verse 5, he says, nevertheless, God was not pleased with most of them, so their bodies were strewn or scattered over the desert. In other words, most of them didn't make it. And he's going to draw a parallel there. And the parallel is not necessarily a pleasant one. In fact, it's not pleasant at all. Because this stands as a warning. And it's always been true. Not everybody is going to make it. Not even all of those that start out the journey. And even those who have equal opportunity with everybody else and have the same things available to us, there will be some who won't make it. And that's really a sad truth. We don't want to lose anyone. And God is not willing that any should perish. But some are going to. And that's the reality. And then verse 6, I would ask the question in the place of verse 6, can I learn from others' mistakes? Or do I have to make those same mistakes myself? Because I can't afford to make all the mistakes in the world, because some of those mistakes will take you out and you don't have a chance to make anymore. Some mistakes that we make are fatal. They take us out of the race. And so he says in verse 6, now these things were examples. And it distresses me a little bit right here that the New International says these things occurred as examples. That's not why they happened. Okay? It's not why they occurred. But the fact that they did occur, now they stand as examples. Now these things, literally, these things were examples to keep us from setting our hearts on evil things as they did. In verse 8 through 10 now, he's going to delineate three mistakes that our fathers made. And these are mistakes that each one of these sins took out a number of people, a large number of people. And he says, and if you look from verse 8 through 10, there were some who fell to sexual temptation. There were some who fell to the idea that I want to do things my way. And there are others who fell to discouragement and disillusionment. And I'm here to tell you that those same three things take out lots of people today. That there are some who start the race, who have every equal opportunity with everybody else, and sexual temptation takes them out. And there are those who start the race and somewhere along the way determine, I don't like this, or I want to change this, and so I want to do it my way. And that takes some people out. And then there are some who just become disillusioned. Maybe the journey's too long. Maybe it's too hard. Maybe there are too many difficulties. Maybe it's not what I thought it was going to be when I started out. And so I become disillusioned and discouraged and just drop off by the wayside and lose heart and don't finish the race. And so now having said that, let's read. He said, verse 7, do not be idolaters, as some of them were, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and got up to indulge in pagan revelry. We should not commit sexual immorality, as some of them did. And in one day, 23,000 died. We should not test the Lord, number two, as some of them did, and were killed by snakes. And thirdly, and do not grumble, as some of them did, and were killed by the destroying angel. You know, one of the things I can remember having a pretty interesting argument with somebody about one time is they felt like they had the right to gripe. And most of us, if we really are caught, you know, without it being in a religious setting, we would probably maintain that we have the right to gripe. And somewhere in all of this, Then I asked this person, I said, well, who gave you that right? And I don't see anywhere where God gave us that right. Now, it doesn't mean we've got to agree with everything that goes, and it doesn't mean that we don't have a way and a time to disagree. But this grumbling and this griping, he said, God is very displeased with. And there are some people who make a practice of grumbling and griping in their life, and he said, God killed them by the destroying angel. God got tired of hearing it, and so he took them out. And then he says again, very much like he did in verse 11, these things happened to them as examples. And they were written down, they've been recorded as warnings for us. And so again, I would ask the question, can we learn from somebody else's mistakes and not make the same mistakes? Realize how serious it is these things are to God. Those of us on whom the fulfillment of the ages has come. So if you think you're standing firm, be careful that you don't fall. And now he gives us two principles that arise from all of this Old Testament history, from Genesis all the way to the end of the Old Testament. And he says these things are written for us as examples, that we wouldn't set our hearts on evil things as they did. And they're warnings for us that God will take you out. Or you will fall out of the race yourself and become discouraged and quit. And so now he's going to give us two principles that come out of this that will motivate us, two practical things that will enable us to stay faithful all the way to the end of the race. And so I need to know those things. Because there are some times when these things have touched my life. There are times when I've been tempted in certain areas. And you have too. And there are times when I've tended to become discouraged and say, man, I didn't ask for all this. I didn't sign on for this. And I really don't want to have to put up with all this. I don't have to put up with this. I can go get a job somewhere else and do something else, and I just don't have to put up with this. You know, the grass always looks greener somewhere else, doesn't it? You get over there and you find out it's not as green as you thought it was. But nevertheless, we tend to think that way. And so he's going to give us two principles here that will motivate us to stay faithful all the way to the end. And the first one is, there is no temptation that has seized you except what is common to man. That's the first principle. As you look back over all of these people and all these incidences, and one of the real values in reading our Bibles and the Old Testament is we see that there are people who have faced some really difficult times, and they have made it through. And we see some people who didn't make it through and why they didn't make it through. And so we learn from them. And then the second, so the first one is, there's no temptation that has seized you except what is common to man. That deals with the struggles in our life. That helps us deal with the struggles. And then the second principle is, God is faithful and he will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. That's the second principle. And that deals with God is working in our life. The first one is how we face those struggles. It is a principle to encourage us that we're not alone, that there have been others who've gone before us who have faced more difficult things than we're facing, and they've made it through it. And then the second principle is God's working in your life as this struggle is happening in your life. And so I would like to translate these into something really, what I think is very practical for using in our life. These two things motivate us to, number one, obey God in everything, even when we don't understand. And that's important. To obey God in everything, even when we don't understand. And I might say, even when we don't feel like it. I don't always feel like obeying God. I don't know about you. Maybe you feel like it. Everything that you read just really hits you right, you know, where you want it to be, and it all sits really well. But there are some things that God wants from me that there are at least times that I don't want to do it. Sometimes I wake up on the wrong side of the bed. It doesn't happen very often, but it has happened a time or two in my life. And so I think about as we go back, and we could just now start throwing names out in the Old Testament as positive and negative examples of this, of people who obeyed God even when they didn't understand, or some people who didn't obey God because they didn't understand and what happened to them. But obviously, the father of our faith, as he's called in the New Testament, Abraham, do you think Abraham understood everything that God told him? When God appeared to him in Genesis chapter 12 and he said, I'm going to make of you a great nation of people, look up at the stars and your descendants are going to be as numerous as that. And he just thrilled in that promise. But then years passed. In fact, a bunch of years passed. He was 75 years old when God first called him. 10 years passed after that promise. 85 years old. 85 years old. Still no children. In Genesis chapter 15, verse 1 and 2, he decided, okay, then Eliezer, my servant, at 85 years old, Eliezer is going to be my heir. More time passes. Approximately another year. God renewed the promise. He said, it's not going to be Eliezer. It's going to be of the fruit of your loins. It's going to be your heir, your descendant. And so he waits another year. No child. So he and his wife concoct this Hagar and Ishmael thing. And then 13 more years pass. And he thinks now, okay, I have the heir, Ishmael. And God appears to him and he says, cast him out. I told you that your wife, Sarah, would have a son. You think he understood this all along? How in the world could a human understand that? How could you figure out? He couldn't figure out. That's why he made all these alternative plans himself. And then in Genesis chapter 17, he's 99 years old when God tells him Sarah is going to have a child by this time next year. He is 100 years old when Isaac was born. 25 years have passed since God made that promise to him. Yet Abraham is commended as the father of the faithful in Romans chapter 4, verse 16. And the story continues that God has him send away Hagar and Ishmael. And then, having done that, and now all his eggs are in one basket, one boy. And God says, take him and kill him. You think he can understand that? Surely, there has to be some times that he has some doubts. Surely, there are some nights that he lays awake trying to figure out how in the world can this be? And yet, he obeyed, even when he didn't understand. And that's what faith is. You don't have to understand in order to trust God. You don't have to know what God is doing. You can't know what God is doing all the time. God's ways are higher than your ways. As high as the heaven is above the earth, how high is that? Infinitely, right? As far as the east is from the west, how far is that? You just keep on going. And so why would I decide I can't do this because I don't understand it? When I'm dealing with something that God tells me to do. And God blessed Abraham and his descendants because he obeyed even when he didn't understand. Why did Rahab protect the spies that were sent to Jericho to spy out the city? In Joshua chapter 2, she has something to say to the spies before they go to bed that night up on her roof, and she's hiding them. And she said, I know the Lord has given this land to you, and that a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in this country are melting with fear because of you. We've heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to Sihon and Og, the two kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan, whom you completely destroyed. When we heard of it, our hearts melted. Everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God is God in heaven above and earth beneath. And then she asked, requested that her kindness in hiding them be repaid by she and her family being spared. And that request was granted. She acted on the knowledge that she had. And God blessed her because of it and her family. And then there was Job. And somebody I've seen a picture that somebody drew of Job. And there was this ash heap, and on top of this ash heap, there was a big question mark. And that kind of characterizes Job, doesn't it? What did he understand about what was going on? I mean, we got to look behind the curtain. We got to hear why and how it was set up, and we still don't even understand it, do we? There's some questions we have about it. And so he didn't know why all of this was happening, and yet he remained faithful to God. In Job 13:3, he said, "Surely I would speak to the Almighty, and I would desire to argue my case with God." He felt throughout the whole book that he was being treated unfairly. And you know what? I agree with him. He was being treated unfairly, wasn't he? He didn't deserve this. How are you going to make sense out of something that doesn't make sense? At least from an earthly perspective. In verse 15 and 16, he will say, "In the midst of all of this, though he slay me, yet will I trust him. He also shall be my salvation." And he continued to trust God even when he didn't understand. God's faithfulness enabled every one of these and many more to obey even when they didn't understand. And then one more principle, a practical application of the principles, is that knowing that God is faithful and knowing that he'll not allow us to be tempted above that which we're able to bear, that keeps us from coming discouraged if you really believe that. If you believe and know that God, that anything that happens to you in your life has got to pass across God's desk, he evaluates it and either stamps it approved or not. Nothing happens to you in your life that God doesn't allow to happen. He filters it. And sometimes we wish that he would filter it a little finer, don't we? That there are some things that happen to us in our life that sometimes we don't know if we can bear it or not, and we have to get to a point where we fall back on these promises that God has given us. And this is one of the ones, that primary ones that we fall back on. There's so many things in this life that discourage us. There's family problems. There's health problems. There's problems on our job. There's problems with friends. There's money problems. There's pride problems. There's loneliness. There's sexual temptation. There's death. There's fears. There's doubts. There's emotional problems. And we could go on. And Satan is going to try every single one of them on us. And some of them are going to work. They're at least going to get into us. And when he smells a weakness, he drives in with everything he's got, with every power at his disposal. And that's a lot more than you and I can stand without God's help. How can we remain faithful through the problems of life? How can a person get to the point of Hebrews chapter 11, verse 35, where it talks about those in that list of faithful, and he ends up by saying, those that were tortured and refused to be released. How do you get to that point? They could say the word, and they would have let them go. They could have denied the faith, and they could have walked free. But they didn't, and they wouldn't. And there was nothing that you could do to cause them to do that. Remember about life, that life is temporary. Whatever is happening to you right now, remember this. This too shall pass. Right? This too shall pass. It's going to be a memory someday. This life will end in death if the Lord doesn't come back before we die. And nothing can happen to you that others have not experienced. There is nothing that has happened to you that others haven't gone through. And the truth is, there are people who have gone through worse. If we went around this auditorium and every one of us listed his or her problems, would there be one problem that is unique that nobody else has ever experienced before? Not one. Not one. If we listed all of our problems, there is not one unique problem we have. And there are people who have been faithful through that, through the problems that I'm facing. So remember that about life. It's temporary. It's going to end. And then remember about God. It says, consider him faithful who made the promise. What promises? Well, let me just list a few. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the crown of glory that will never fade away. Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown of laurel that will not last, but we do it to get a crown that will last forever. Blessed is a man who perseveres under trial, because when he stood the test, he'll receive the victor's crown, the life that God has promised to those who love him. Do not be afraid of what you're about to suffer. I tell you, the devil will put some of you in jail to test you. You will suffer persecution. Be faithful, even to the point of death, and I will give you the crown of life. And if you flip the coin over, that's always a good thing to do. Say, okay, what if I do so-and-so? This is my goal. This is where I'm aiming. But what if I do so-and-so? What's going to happen? Well, flip the coin over and ask yourself, what are you going to gain if you allow the troubles of this life to discourage you and cause you to, in the words of Job's wife, curse God and die? What advantage is that going to be to you? What are you going to gain from that? You're going to lose it all. Faithful to the end. There are some who start out that are not going to make it. And that's a really, really, really sad thing. And it's not because God abandoned them. God said, I'll never leave you. I'll never forsake you. He's not willing that any perish. And so, as we face our lives, then one of the things that helps us remain faithful all the way to the end is to go back. That's why we're reading our Bibles. It's why I'm just pushing to read your Bible. Because if you go back and you put these people in your heart and you know their story, then you have something to fall back on when difficulty comes into your life. And life doesn't, and difficulties don't rob you of the treasure that God has promised you. Remember, there is no temptation that has taken you, that has seized you, except what is common to man. Others have walked that trail before you. And God is faithful. And he'll not allow you to be tempted above that which you're able to bear. And then he says, as the promise, but when you're tempted, he will provide a way out so that you can stand up under it. He didn't say he'd take you out of the difficulty. He didn't say he'd make it go away. He said, I'll make your back strong enough that it won't break your back. You can bear it. You can stand it. And when you have, to the very end, I don't know what all heaven's going to be like. I like to read about it and sing about it, don't you? But it is going to be so wonderful that when we look back on this life, it will have been nothing in comparison with the grandeur and the beauty and the peace that God's going to give us when we reach the end of our race. And so let's all make sure that nobody drops out of that race. None of us. Let's hold on to each other tightly. And if you're tonight, you're struggling with something that you need the prayers of brothers and sisters, it's one of the ways we hold on to each other. Do you know how encouraging it is to hear somebody pray about you and your problems to God and ask God to help you? And so if there's a struggle that you're facing tonight and you need the prayers of brothers and sisters in your life, or if you're not a Christian, then this is your opportunity. While we stand and sing, won't you come?